You're listening to the WFYI Weekly News Podcast for the week of October 26th through November 1st, 2015. I'm Christopher Ayers. This week, we take a look at next week's Indianapolis municipal elections.
With those at-large seats gone, we've had some councilors pitted against themselves.
A listen to the sounds of S.M. Wolf, live from the 90.1 small studio.
We're constantly trying new things and willing to experiment with each other's ideas.
And could so-called digital badges replace the school transcript? Those stories and more are coming up. Please stay tuned. Municipal election season is in full swing in Indiana, and the city of Indianapolis will soon have a new mayor-elect. But down ballot, significant changes following the last election in 2011 will without a doubt change the makeup of the city-county legislature. That's because for the first time since Marion County and the city of Indianapolis merged in 1970 to form a unified city-county government, voters won't be electing at-large representatives to the city-county council. 90.1 WFYI's Darren Mullen takes a deeper look at what effect the changes are having on this year's campaign and what their lasting impact might be.
Going door to door, City-County Councilor Pam Hickman is trying to gain support and votes in a new district for an election she says touches people directly.
The City-County Council and the mayor are the shortest arm every citizen in this county has to government that affects the quality of their life every day.
But Hickman's path to re-election has dramatically changed. She's a Democrat who currently occupies one of the four disappearing at-large council seats, and the redrawn lines have pitted her against incumbent Republican Christine Scales in the new District 3. Hickman says the changes could hurt residents' representation in the districts.
I think that citizens need to understand that their counselor is the only person that can help them after January 2016. In other words, there won't be an at-large that you can contact if your counselor is not on board with you.
In 2011, an outgoing Republican majority on the council redrew the districts after the 2010 census. Democrats had just won a slim majority in the council, and many believe the new map gave the GOP an unfair advantage in trying to win back council seats. The issue made its way to the Indiana Supreme Court, where a 2014 ruling allowed the new district lines to stand. The state legislature also passed a bill in 2013 to eliminate those four at-large seats, all currently held by Democrats, shrinking the total number of councilors from 29 to 25. Scales says at-large councilors could sometimes get in the way of district representatives. But she also says she was the only Republican to lobby against the changes.
I did not like how that major change in our governance took place without a lot of input from the citizens of the county. I'm a big proponent of making sure we have integrity of process and also that we don't abuse power.
Democratic Councilor Zach Adamson also opposed eliminating the at-large seats. And he sharply criticizes the way incumbent Republicans handled redistricting in 2011.
The essence of the mission was corrupt. I think the product is always going to be corrupt. So I say that you're not going to end up with a healthy map either way, whether the council comes back as Democrat or Republican.
Supporters of the changes, including Council Minority Leader Mike McQuillan, say the new structure will make the council more efficient.
I think the elimination of the four does make it move a little smoother. And I think it will be a positive as we move forward next year.
A smaller council should create a smoother path to pass legislation and better representation for voters, says University of Indianapolis political science professor Laura Merrifield Albright.
In some ways, we're making it more equitable, the fact that every district for sure gets one person, but no more than one, because we don't have those at-large seats, in some ways makes it more democratic.
Political observers also say it's possible that the changes could allow Republicans to retake the majority on the new, smaller council. For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Darren Mullen.
Now to take a closer look at these citywide elections, we're joined by WFYI reporter Ryan Delaney, who's been watching these races closely. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, Chris.
Ryan, I want to start out by talking about the top of the ticket, and that be the race for mayor of Indianapolis. It's been an office held by a Republican for the past 8 years and really for much of the last half century. But there's been an assumption throughout this cycle that Democratic nominee Joe Hogsett is heavily favored to defeat Republican Chuck Brewer. Why is that?
Hogsett has decades of political experience. He's a very well-known name here in Indianapolis and the whole state. His only successful win for office was as Secretary of State in 1990, but since then he's run for several other offices, Congress and Senate, and he was most recently a federal prosecutor, which got him on the news pretty regularly. He also has a major fundraising edge over his opponent, Chuck Brewer, the Republican. His $4 million he's raised in this race is quadruple what Brewer has raised, and that means significantly more time on television. He's had several ad buys that have run since the beginning of the summer, and lastly, he's picked up a lot of key endorsements, including the police union, the Indy Chamber, and the local paper, The Star.
Are there any factors, then, that could change what many see as a preordained outcome?
There are. Republicans are banking on Chuck Brewer's outsider image and his position as an underdog. He's cut from the same cloth as a very popular mayor, Greg Ballard, the Republican who's retiring. They're both former Marines with little political experience. Ballard, 8 years ago, upset Bart Peterson. But the political environment then was pretty different than it is today. Turnout is also expected to be very, very low on Tuesday, and that could bring some different variables into play. Will people automatically vote for Hogsett because he's the assumed winner, or will they stay home because of that and you know, figuring he's got that locked up?
Okay, well, let's move to some of those these down-ticket races, notably the city-county council contest. As we just heard in Darren Mullen's piece, the makeup of the council will be different regardless of outcomes since districts have been redrawn since the last election. And on top of that, the state legislature eliminated the council's four at-large seats after the last election. What effect is this going to have on the council's political makeup?
Yeah, as you mentioned, since the last election of the city county council, the districts have been redrawn a little bit, so the boundaries are different. And then a year after that, the state legislature voted to eliminate four at-large council seats. So that's going to shrink the overall size of the council. And those four at-large seats have been all held by Democrats, giving them that one vote majority that they have right now on the council. Now, with those at-large seats gone, we've had some councilors pitted against themselves, incumbent at-large holders running against district holders. And that's going to possibly, you know, really kind of shift the political makeup come January when we see a new council. Right now, we have a Republican mayor with a one-seat majority Democratic council. That could flip if the Republicans eke out a majority and, you know, we have a Democratic mayor. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
So things are really going to be shaken up regardless. With this redrawn map, what specific district races are you keeping an eye on?
Yeah, there's a few. In the second district on the north side, you have Democrat Kip Tu running for re-election against the Republican Colleen Fanning. And that race has been seen a lot of money put in, and they're actually on television, which is rare for a council. A lot of money spent on that race. In the third district, just over still on the north side, you have Democrat Pam Hickman against Republican Christine Scales. That one's interesting because this is one of those races that I just talked about where you have two incumbents running against each other now, and both reportedly very good friends. So that race hasn't turned too nasty, thankfully. In the 16th district, just south of downtown, the Fountain Square area, Republican Jeff Miller is trying to hold on to his seat against Democrat Emily Schrock, who has run a very active campaign. That district lines have also shifted a little bit. Fountain Square's demographics have changed a lot over the recent years as a population there has really grown. And then in the 21st district, Democrat Frank Mascari against Republican Adam Davidson. Davidson is a Beech Grove city councilor right now, so a lot of political experience he has. And then lastly, not really one to watch, but maybe a congratulations to Republican Jack Sandlin in the 24th district. He's running unopposed, so he's got his race locked up. So we know one of the 25 already.
All right, Ryan, so it's going to be very interesting over the next week as we see how this all unfolds. Maybe we can talk about this next week. WFYI City Reporter Ryan Delaney, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
It's now time for a look inside the 90.1 WFYI small studio. This month's featured band loves Halloween and says their music reflects the holiday's tricks and treats. When you hear their sound, you might agree. 90.1 WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer introduces us to S.M. Wolf.
Their music is a bit mysterious and spooky, and S.M. Wolf leader and guitarist Adam Gross says the group is a family of sorts, a power pop family band, a term he learned from the Beatles.
John had put out his first solo album, which Yoko was on, and then Paul put out his first album, which Linda was on, and John was like, you know, Yoko and I did the family band album thing, and now Paul's trying to do the family band album thing. And I always thought, like, that's really cool. And I do feel like we're a family, you know? Like, I mean, Mel and I are married. You know, I've known Ben for forever. Rachel's like my sister.
Melanie plays drums, Ben bass, and Rachel the Casio tone.
They fed lies to heathens. Old sins of treason.
It never feels like stagnant. Like playing shows never feels like a chore, or that we're doing the same thing every night or every week. We're kind of constantly trying new things and willing to experiment with each other's ideas, and I think that keeps it fresh and feels like we're always going forward.
Their newest release is Neon Debris, available on full-length vinyl plus CD, each with an eye-catching cover that was photographed in Mel and Adam's basement.
So they brought glow sticks and balloons and glitter and confetti and silly string and fake glass and some neon paint. And we just went to town, just smashing things and breaking things open and like just making it look like some crazy neon party had just happened.
And as for the name of the band, Adam's undergraduate degree is in French and philosophy, so it makes sense.
There were all these authors that used first initial, middle initial, last name. So I thought S.M. Wolf kind of sounded like this. It's kind of dark and kind of mysterious. And then it also kind of sounds like this, you know, unknown author. I just thought it was kind of romantic.
For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
To see S.M. Wolf's full performance, as well as past small studio sessions, go to wfyi.org/small studio. Finally this week, the school transcript. It may seem like a simple list of classes taken, but for high school seniors applying for college or university seniors applying for a job, it's a valuable asset. The classes listed on that piece of paper tell admissions counselors or employers where your knowledge lies. But what if you could actually show them what you learned instead? That's where so-called digital badges come in. As State Impact Indiana's Rachel Morello reports, more Indiana schools are awarding these badges to supplement traditional class credit.
If you've ever been in Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, or you're big into video games, you've probably earned your fair share of badges. Whether you sold the most cookies in your troop, or finally moved on to level 4, it's an accomplishment you can now proudly display. Badging has been so successful in other realms that professionals are working to translate it into academics. And the badges students earn don't look much different than the kind you earn in, say, Super Mario Brothers.
They're a way of recognizing accomplishment or learning that's digital, which means it can be shared on the internet really easily, like you can post it on Facebook.
That's Daniel Hickey. He's a professor of learning sciences at Indiana University. He's also an enthusiastic proponent of digital badges. He's piloted a series of online courses that grant students a badge for finishing each section, rather than a certificate or class credit. They're a relatively new phenomenon, but almost everywhere learning is happening, people are talking about the possibility of digital badges. That includes pilot programs at a number of state universities, including IU, Notre Dame, and Purdue. Hickey says badges are unique signifiers because they recognize things that can't be listed on a school transcript. Intangible skills, like teamwork, professionalism, leadership, or organizational skills.
They have a lot of evidence in them. I mean, virtually all the work the students did, all their interactions with their peers, the number of times their peers promoted their work as being exemplary, their performance on the exam if they chose to include it.
Okay, so I'm going to act like I'm an admissions counselor or a potential employer. I'm sitting at my computer and I'm going to search on LinkedIn for Sandy Stringfellow. She's one of Hickey's recent students. Okay, so here's her page. We've got her name, her picture at the top. Scroll down a little bit. There's, oh, her summary of her background. And yep, there are her badges. She's got three of them pretty prominently right there at the top. And they look like links. So I'm going to click on one of them. And it looks like we're getting a little bit of the description of the course she took. And if I scroll even more, I'm seeing some of her assignments, it looks like, with some comments. That's pretty cool.
I can list whatever I want on my LinkedIn and say like, oh, I can totally do this, I can totally do this without substantiating those claims at all. But the badge is sort of like an opportunity to say, yes, I did it, but also here's the evidence.
Like Stringfellow, some students earn badges in place of traditional course credit. In most cases, students earn badges to supplement their grades. There are a lot of badge systems, and each is unique. And that leads to the problem badges face. How do developers get employers across the country, or even across the state for that matter, to recognize what a certain badge means if those coming out of IU look different from those coming out of Purdue?
The manufacturers were saying, show us someone who has this badge, who can do the job, and then we'll get on board. Well, the educational systems were saying, show us an employer who's willing to hire someone who has this badge.
Even then, Hickey says, it will take a while. Widespread implementation won't happen unless everybody gets on board. He calls it a chicken and egg problem.
The same way that an employer or a admissions officer really digs more deeply when they encounter something that's unfamiliar, we would expect the same thing to happen with badges. The first time you see this badge, oh, what's that? Drill, 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 drill. Next time you see that badge, drill, drill. Next time you see the badge, cool.
But despite their growing popularity, some experts say badges will never replace the more traditional methods of tracking professional or academic growth. They'll always be supplemental. For State Impact Indiana, I'm Rachel Morello. Talking about a girl that looks quite like you.
She didn't have the time to wait for you.
That's it for this edition of the WFYI Weekly News Podcast. We encourage you to subscribe to this show. You could do so on iTunes or Stitcher. You can also find us on SoundCloud. Just search WFYI. In addition, you can follow us online at WFYI.org, on Twitter at WFYI News, and on Facebook, WFYI. This has been a production of WFYI News, produced at 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Studios in Indianapolis. I'm Christopher Ayers. Thanks for listening.